This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
In terms of the news cycle, it's an old story. We're not talking about really old. We're talking about 3 years. The kidnapping of 300 or more girls from a Nigerian village by Boko Haram militants. And there were rapes. There was forced marriages. Very strange things. And we hear that some are slated to be released or have been released. I assumed when the story first broke that we were talking about these young girls being Christians, because so often in the Islamic world, that is the first target, the most vulnerable of Christians. But I wonder how many Americans knew that they were. Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So I assumed when looking at this story years ago and since that we were talking about the typical targets for radical Islam, in this case Boko Haram, going after the most vulnerable, which would be young women. And I assumed that they were Christians. Is that general knowledge according to the media coverage of this story?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because if you look at the coverage that's online, I would say about half of it mentions that they're Christians, and about half of it doesn't. And the irony, just to sum everything up real quick, but then you and I can unpack it, the irony is that the very publications that originally mentioned that the girls were almost all Christians and that this was a Christian village that was raided. Now, it was of a village in the northern part of Nigeria, which is predominantly Muslim, but this village was Christian. So the girls that were kidnapped were Christian. The newspapers and organizations that covered it tended to be the very international and elite publications that a lot of Christians, quite frankly, don't pay much attention to. We're talking about here now the New York Times, BBC, and whatever. There was an original New York Times story that included the fact that the girls were Christian. So that detail, whether or not you knew it, depended in part on how much mainstream and elite mainstream coverage you consumed, which frankly is not a lot of Americans, and in my experience, not a lot of Christians. Christians tend to get their news through their own websites and whatever, and some of those websites mentioned that the girls were Christian, but at the same time, those are not the websites that have the resources to chase stories in Nigeria. So what we have here, in my mind, is a classic example of the disconnect between much of the American public and a subject in which there's a crucial religious detail that if you don't know that detail, you don't understand the story very well. Now we have an update 3 years later where apparently about 80 of the girls have been released. And once again, we have mixed coverage. Some people are talking about the faith element. Some people are not. I mean, how do you avoid the faith element in a radicalized band of Islamic warriors? Part of Boko Haram is still connected to ISIS, kind of ISIS of Nigeria. These radicals kidnap people. They're making a statement. The statement they openly say is to force these girls to convert to Islam and to break the will of Christians. Doesn't that sound like a rather important detail of the story to you?
Well, it's kind of Boko Haram's reason to do what they did, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, now, they also, we got to stress this, Boko Haram also wants to slaughter and punish Muslims who don't go along with their view of Islam. In fact, if Boko Haram was going to take control of northern Nigeria, that's exactly who they would have needed to kill the most and knock them out of power. In other words, Muslims who don't agree with their versions of Islam are especially hated. These are infidels within their own camp. But then meanwhile, in northern Nigeria, you have isolated pockets of Christians. And obviously, those were targeted too for a different, important, but symbolic reason.
So this is intriguing to me because Americans, and then you say in particular Christians, are consuming their news largely apart from, as you said, the more international or elite news outlets, New York Times, BBC. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say they would say, I don't trust that source. Go deeper into that because it creates a news gap. Because if that news source is actually telling us something about the story that we need to know, but Christians are saying, well, I don't trust that source. The fault does not lie with the New York Times, the BBC.
Well, as a rule, Americans don't care that much about events on the other side of the world anyway. And as I've said, secular journalists know that the public isn't that interested in foreign news. And also, the secular journalists themselves, I mean, let's put it this way, if they're not interested in religion, are they really interested in religion on the other side of the world that their readers aren't that interested in? That's like a double cross, isn't it? A double whammy, a catch-22. At the same time, you have Americans who aren't interested in news on the other side of the world. And meanwhile, the Christian news that they get, while there are excellent wire services and publications that talk about persecution a lot, for at least 15 or 20 years, scholars such as my colleague Paul Marshall of the Media Project, Paul Marshall, in the classic book, Their Blood Cries Out, I believe that was co-written with Leah Gilbert, that book made a point that for a lot of Americans, Christians being persecuted on the other world, on the other side of the world, doesn't fit their view of how the end times are supposed to come about. I mean, especially if these are not evangelical Christians. I mean, if these are Orthodox Christians or Catholic Christians, a lot of Americans aren't sure what they think of those churches in the first place, especially in their more global and exotic forms. So they're kind of waiting for the second coming, and these folks, you know, are not a part of their Revelations movie-based left-behind scenarios. They're the wrong kind of Christians on the other side of the world, and frankly, they just are not that interested in them. And to some extent, this is an extension of the fact that American Christians don't seem to be that concerned about the near extinction of the ancient forms of the church in the Middle East. Now, in Nigeria, you're dealing with Anglican Christians, Catholic Christians, Protestant Christians, etc. But, I mean, how much coverage does Africa get in the American press, let alone religion in Africa, let alone religion in a part of Africa that's as complicated as Nigeria? I mean, you know, let's go back to reality TV, move on and watch the NFL. We're just not that interested in that stuff. A lot of Americans, that is. But who are the news organizations that have the resources in the midst of the massive cutbacks of foreign coverage as a result of the media advertising and economic crises that we're in now? What publications still care the most about foreign news? Well, as you just said, ironically, the very publications that many Christians don't trust the most. So you think they're reading the New York Times anyway? Elites are reading the New York Times and following it, dare I say, religiously. But how many Christians are? So we have a massive and very important disconnect here. One that's quite separate from the other interesting story to me, which is what happens when the New York Times does try to cover these stories. I'm glad they're covering the stories, but there are some fascinating details in what they end up covering that kind of tick me off and make me wish they had done a more complete job.
Such as?
Well, let me give you an example. I mentioned that the New York Times several years ago mentioned that most of these girls were Christian. So that's in their data banks. Somebody knows that. But now, do you remember the most famous photo op after the kidnapping of the girls? Boko Haram set the girls down in a clearing somewhere out in the jungle or the woods. And here all the girls are together. What details do you remember from those famous videos and photos?
I can't say that I remember much. What was I missing?
Okay. First of all, the girls are all wearing hijabs. Okay. That's a rather important detail. Second, we are told that they had all been encouraged to convert to Islam, which implies convert from something else. And they're all chanting sections of the Quran in Arabic. They have been forced to learn by rote a couple of key passages of the Quran, and here they are singing them or quoting them, chanting them in Arabic. So the issue here of forced conversions is right there in the videos that went worldwide, that were a part of the kind of whole social media, bring back our girls, Shibak girls, those hashtag campaigns on Twitter, you know, with First Lady Michelle Obama and others taking part. Right at the center of that are these images of the girls sitting there dressed in a particular highly traditional form of Muslim garb for females. Now, this none of that's mentioned in the New York Times update the other day when the word breaks that they're going to be released. And then, this is what really got me fired up on all this when I saw it and wanting to continue watching the coverage. They did a sequel when some of the girls were first seen after their release, and we were trying to find out who was released or not. And that story is strange because it has a mixed signal. One, it has a quote in it from the Reverend Enoch Mark, who is just called, you know, a pastor, who wanted to know if his daughters were among those released. At the end of the story, we find out that they're not, his daughters' names are not on the list, and it appears they were not released. But then in the middle, there is this reference. Yet it was the singular act in Shibak that trained the world's sights on this war in Nigeria. Images broadcast by Boko Haram not long after the kidnapping of the veiled girls sitting on the ground in captivity resonated with celebrities and everyday people alike and spread across social media, where a hashtag bring back our girls hashtag became popular. Now, let me read that key sentence again, because I think we have a grammatical problem here. Where's the comma, or is something missing? Images broadcast by Boko Haram not long after the kidnapping of the veiled girls sitting on the ground in captivity resonated with celebrities, or is it images broadcast by Boko Haram not long after the kidnapping? And then something's missing of the veiled girl sitting on the ground in captivity resonated. The implication is that the girls were veiled when they were kidnapped, grammatically, the way this is written. And if you read that and you think logically, that means the girls were already Muslims when they were kidnapped, which contradicts earlier New York Times coverage. Either that, or it's not long after the kidnapping, comma, of the girls sitting on the ground and the veils they were forced to adapt after their conversion to Islam. Right? There's missing information, isn't there, in that sentence. So it seemed to me that, you know, was there confusion in the copy desk at the New York Times? And I stress again, the New York Times has just about the best corrections department. Any newspaper anywhere in the world, they take corrections very seriously. But if you call the same story up, you now see one correction at the end. Because of an editing error, an article on Monday about the release of the 82 girls abducted by the terrorist group Boko Haram misidentified the organization that worked with the Nigerian and Swiss governments to secure their release. It's the International Committee of the Red Cross, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No correction on the implication that the girls were Muslim at the time of their kidnapping. So there's we have two different levels of disconnect. We have the disconnect in whether much of the American public knows what's going on in this because of material in the media. Second, the fact that Americans don't follow international coverage that closely anyway. Maybe there's a third level, which is that the press tends not to be interested in religion, which makes it even less likely to be interested in religion on the other side of the planet. And then finally, when the coverage gets made, it's kind of inconsistent, spotty, and what in this case seems to me like to have been a little bit rushed, or they just didn't think much about the actual words they just put down on digital paper. All in all, are you surprised Americans don't know the details of this story?
You point out something else, Terry, and that has to do with the BBC coverage of it. And your objection is if I read you correctly, is the word encouraged. Where did you find it, and why do you think that's less than accurate description of the situation?
Well, I mean, yeah, right. The whole idea that these girls were encouraged to convert. Let's see if I can find the exact. Yeah, here's the exact passage from BBC. Many of the Shibak girls were Christian, but were encouraged to convert to Islam and to marry their kidnappers during their time in captivity. Now, think about that again. They were encouraged to convert to Islam and to marry their captivators, their kidnappers during their time in captivity. Encouraged. One reader sent me a note that said, this is very similar to the Bolsheviks encouraging lots of Russians to move and begin new careers in Siberia.
Mm.
Encouraged? When you have an actual quote in your story from someone with Boko Haram saying, we would marry them out at the age of 9. We would marry them out at the age of 12. That doesn't sound like encouraged. And human rights groups had stressed all the way through here that you were dealing not only with, you know, with rapes, with children being, some of them dying, you know, during false medical care, early pregnancies, perhaps they were too young, you know, to safely have pregnancies, let alone in the stress of multiple rapes or being, you know, out in the jungle, removed from civilization without proper medical care. You have human rights groups that are stressing all of these elements of the story in terms of what ISIS and Boko Haram are doing with religious minority people that they are, if they don't just kill them, they're then putting them into slavery and women and girls into sexual servitude. That all ends up being expressed in the word encouraged. Like, what happens if you don't agree to learn the prayers to adopt the radicalized version of Islam promulgated by Boko Haram? What happens to you if you refuse? Probably not anything good. So yeah, that word of the story just jumped up and hit me. Even though I was glad they had the element in the story that most of the girls were Christian, they said many were Christian. It's most of them were Christian. But this whole encouraged to convert to Islam and encouraged to marry their kidnappers, even secular human rights groups would say that that isn't what's going on here.
Terry, often when we have these conversations, I'll wind things up by asking you to give advice to kind of a hypothetical journalist or editor or something like that. But in this case, given where our conversation began, I wonder if you would give some advice to the Christian media consumer regarding those elite publications, and as you've pointed out several times here, that still have the resources to cover international news and still have the resources to cover things like Nigeria and Boko Haram in depth, and may be, in this case, a few of the only news outlets where the story is getting told in its fullness. What kind of advice would you give to the Christian media consumer?
Well, first of all, when you're dealing with BBC and the New York Times, you're dealing with what I would argue are the two most influential media operations in the world. all of planet Earth, which means what they do is important whether you want to pay attention to it or not. Because to some degree, their coverage is helping shape and drive the coverage of other media. And like you just said, they have the resources to create information that other media don't have. I honestly think the leaders in our denominations should be taking this on. I mean, especially if they are at all interested in either A, religious freedom in the rest of the world, or B, religious liberty in the United States of America. Why don't our denominations have actual committees of people who are monitoring the most elite forms of our press and the most widespread parts of our press, such as CNN, Fox, the Associated Press, Reuters, etc.? Why can't they spend a little bit of their time, even at the voluntary level, at the top of our denominations? And when things like this happen, why aren't these newsrooms hearing from our denominational leaders? And you say, well, what's our motivation to do that? Our motivation to do that in this particular case is to speak up for our suffering and dying brothers and sisters on the other side of the world. Because you think that our State Department and various branches of our government don't mind when these subjects are glossed over by things like BBC and the New York Times? You think that doesn't contribute to an atmosphere that these subjects don't matter? I mean, we have a blind spot that I've talked about many times between religion and the press. The two halves of the First Amendment, you don't see eye to eye. They don't respect each other. But it matters that our church is a part of that blind spot as well, that we don't care about the valid role that newsrooms like the New York Times and the BBC play in the marketplace of information in our world. And I would argue, as Paul Marshall has argued in the past, that our lack of interest in this topic is directly related to the fact that we aren't paying serious attention to these media, and we aren't dialoguing with them. We aren't letting them know that we're noticing what they're doing and not doing, complimenting them when they get it right, and criticizing them when they get it wrong. This is the sort of thing that this affects whether people live and die in churches around the world, this blindness that we have toward the issue. And it might be a blindness that, yes, is caused in part by the media or is linked to what's happening in the media, but it's still a blindness in our own churches and our own church leadership. And it's time for that to stop in terms of whether they try to seriously dialogue with journalists who are doing this coverage. Sorry, I get a little bit emotional about this, but this is important stuff. It's affecting the church around the world.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.